Dancers have a lot to balance. From their pirouettes to their jumps, a dancer's performance is a direct result of hard work and motivation. So where does food fit into this? There's a lot of myths and a ton of antiquated ideals about what a dancer's diet should look like. And I'm here to dispel those. I'm Rachel Fine, registered dietitian nutritionist and founder of To The Point Nutrition. I'm the dance nutritionist, and I'm here to tell you that to be a successful dancer, you don't have to diet. Instead, I'll teach you how to use food as your best tool to enhance your performance. A nourishing meal plan not only fuels your dancing, but also enhances your strength, improves your balance, supports your flexibility, and most importantly, reduces your risk to injury.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I feel a little bit tired, I'm not gonna lie. Post-COVID, pre-summer intensive life right now. So Josephine, just why don't you give us a nice overview of what you do at The Point Shop, and then I'd like to get into your history as a dancer. So introduce us to who you are and what you do.
Yes, so I'm the founder of The Point Shop. We are a professional point shoe fitting company. So we're the only company in the country that just focuses on professional point shoe fitting, and we cover every brand that is like every popular brand.
Yeah, that's so cool. Now talk to me about your history as a dancer.
I danced from when I was 3 years old all the way until I went to college. So I think back in the day when you and I, Rachel, were dancing, it was more prominent to make the decision between college and dancing. And I definitely leaned more towards academics. So I left the dance world when I went to college, and I thought that was going to be it. I thought I was going to never look back. I thought I was never going to come back to ballet, but it somehow circled back when I graduated from college right during the economic downfall. So wow. That was around, I graduated 2010. So it was a couple of years after the economic crash, and I decided to start a business, and my fallback was always dance. So And I grew up at my mom's store where I learned how to fit point shoes. So that was something that I incorporated back.
What is your mom's history with point shoe fitting?
So my mom started the business about 18 years ago. So I kind of grew up doing point shoe fittings and things like that. And it was like, my mom's had a series of other businesses as well. So my mom danced when she was younger. And then before we moved to the United States, we moved in 98. She had a wedding dress shop in Korea. She also had a tutoring business when she came to the States. So this is really her third business. And it was inspired by her past, but it was also inspired by me because I was dancing and I was in the thick of ballet at that time. And she saw that there wasn't a lot of options for us to go to for retail. So she started that. And then after I graduated from college and I didn't know what to do, I decided to go into retail as well. So I opened up my own store in Irvine. Mm-hmm. And from there, it just kind of grew into The Point Shop. It just turned into something that is very different than what it was when we first started.
Sure. I feel like the age of social media probably helped that. I know it helped with my own business. Did you feel that as well?
Oh my gosh. If it wasn't for social media, there would have been no way that I would have been able to spread the word. So back then when we first started, yeah, it was Facebook. Facebook is where we first started. And Instagram, there might have been Instagram, but it wasn't like a big platform yet. So we started out with Facebook, and then we started to do more marketing that way because it was free and spread the word. And then we moved to around to different platforms. Now I think we're the biggest on YouTube now, but YouTube is our like newest platform. But first it was Facebook, and then it's Instagram, and now it's YouTube. And we're just kind of following the trends of where things are going. And if it wasn't for social media, there would have been no way that we would have survived, because we would have had to compete with these giants that were already in place. Like Discount Dance was really, really big. It's still huge now, but they have so much more resources than we do. And they just had so much more capital than we had. So we couldn't compete with their prices. We can't compete with their selection. We can't compete with the internet, you know? So social media was definitely a big part. And we, to this day, we haven't spent any money on marketing. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we just try to find more creative ways to kind of spread the word. And that's through education, as you are doing as well, is, you know, if you're giving value to people, then I think people are more likely to listen to you and they're more likely to trust you. And I think that's what we were able to do through social media, you and me both.
Absolutely. And we've spoken about this multiple times, really just the benefit as being a small business and having this access to social media. So I could not agree more with you. I am curious though, because we, like you said earlier, really the difference between when we were graduating high school versus now is that it did feel like there was more of this ultimatum of you either went to college and studied more of an academic route, or you didn't go to college and you delayed that and you just really pursued dancing. And I feel like there's been a shift, and at least especially with COVID, we're seeing a lot more, or many more dancers incorporate academics in addition to their dancing. Do you feel like that as well?
Absolutely. And we work with a few universities that have dance programs. And before, what university dance majors would do is that they would graduate, but they wouldn't have a performing career after. They would probably go into some field that incorporates dance, but they don't go into a performance route. And now that's totally different. Now you're, I don't know if it's because the dancers are dancing longer into, or if they are, they just have a longer career, but they'd certainly have more of a chance to get into a company that is, yes. that, so we know a ton of dancers that are very successful after they graduate. So it's a really nice way to fall back. I know that a lot of dancers, they finish their careers and they want to go back to school, but that's very difficult to do because that hiatus is so long. But now you're able to incorporate academics with dance. So it's really the best of both worlds. And I'm really encouraged by this new type of pathway.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the dancers I was once speaking to on Conversations with the Pros actually said that, I believe it was JKO, which feeds into ABT, they're starting to take dancers actually at older ages because they feel that, you know, younger dancers are very much immature and they might not necessarily understand the benefits of incorporating that academic you know, world in addition to their dancing. So I find that so fascinating as well.
It's true.
By the way, what's so cool is that like you and I were able to pursue academics, but at the same time, for me, I pursued dance, then got burnt out, went into academics, and then went back into dance and was able to really fuse all of my passions together, which it sounds like you did too, just being an entrepreneur and a businesswoman and you know, thriving in the dance world as well.
I think that's one of the most fun things about business is that you can make it whatever you want it to be. So you can take every single thing from your background. And for me, I think whenever I left a phase in my life, it almost felt like I wasted that time. And I think a lot of people feel that way. When they dance for a very long time and they leave ballet, they're like, oh my gosh, I danced for 15 plus years. And I feel like I like wasted that time doing this thing that I'm not even going to pursue. But what people don't really understand is that you can incorporate every single thing that you have ever experienced. And same thing, I've had many like career paths that I could have gone into. I think when I was in university, I thought I was going to go into broadcast journalism. So I was a communication major, but I was in the school TV station. So I learned how to edit. I learned how to shoot. I learned how to speak on camera. All of those things are now incorporated into our YouTube channel. That's something that know, when I left and I went into the ballet business, I didn't think that I was going to use that again. So stepping into using all the experiences that you had and really understanding that nothing is quite a waste is really important for dancers that are working so hard to go towards a ballet career. And I say, even if you never pursue ballet, even if you never go into a company, it's going to come back in some form or another. It's part of you now.
I agree. And one thing also that I like to focus on is the idea of what a fulfilling dance career really means, because I think a lot of where it's kind of ingrained to us at young ages that a fulfilling career only means a performance career. And I have come to learn in my own life how so far from the truth that is, you know what I mean? I feel like I have so much fulfillment in the career that I have now that's not a performance career, but very much, you know, it, part of the dance world. And I feel like you would agree with that.
Absolutely. I think it's really important for people to understand, like, why they want to go into a certain path. Like, if you want to become a dancer, what is it about being a dancer that you love the most? Is it the performing aspect of it? Is it being part of a company? Is it the actual dancing itself? What is it about dance that you want to pursue? If you love this art form and you want it to exist in this world, and that is all that we want, then you can use that in a different way. And maybe your skills are more fit for something else. Yeah. I think that I'm much more happy in the position that I am in currently than I would have been if I was a dancer, as a performing dancer. And I think that a lot of people need to figure out exactly what it is that they love about it and to understand that there are other paths, because, you know, the only paths that you are really given as a dancer is you either become a performer or you become a teacher. And that was it before. And if you're lucky, you own a studio.
Right.
Those are the only places that you were able to go. But, you know, as Dance Medica and as you are showing, there's many different paths that you can incorporate your experience as a dancer. And perhaps that is the thing that you will love the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know what I mean? So many dancers, just as I talk about this all the time, just that all or nothing mindset of, like you said, either being the performer or the studio owner, but thinking of it as, you know, there are other avenues here and you can still pursue this passion in a, perhaps a way that's more sustainable for your lifestyle.
Exactly. And I think that's that speaks to your message in general, even when it comes to nutrition, this like all or nothing mindset, it's so difficult to walk away from that mindset. I think as a dancer, because you're like, I have to be perfect and I have to do this one thing forever and just focus on this thing. But really, you have so many different avenues of exploring your world and your career. And especially if you own, if you're crazy enough to start your own business, you can really grow that into many different places.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Josephine, I want to dive into some questions that I got from dancers in regards to point shoes, because I think it'd be really valuable. When I was a dancer, I remember being in one of the summer intensives that I attended, and we had a point shoe fitter, I guess, come and give us a workshop. And I didn't even know that was a thing at the time. And I was probably on point shoes already for 5 years until then. And I remember her looking at my feet and being like, wow, you have Egyptian where it's like the worst type basically for point. and she gave me all these tips about, you know, how I can build up, make the three toe platform, and that'll help me really stay balanced. And that was so eye opening to me. So I find it so incredible what you do and to raise awareness that point shoe fitting is actually really important and that we can't just necessarily order a pair of point shoes online and hope that we're going to dance well in them. So my first question for you is just point shoe readiness. You know, how would a dancer or perhaps a dance teacher really know when a dancer might be ready to start point?
There's so many different factors in going into that portion, and it's still very controversial. And we usually take the dancer to a physical therapist or someone who can do an x-ray, someone who can, who understands the dancer a little bit more. As point shoe fitters, we look at several different things, but it can be broken down to three major parts. We're looking at the strength, their technique, and their flexibility. And the flexibility of your ankles and your feet and your toes, the range of motion that you have, and then also what is your what's your strength? How well do you control your body? And what is your technique? So a lot of it is a mix between your genetics and what you are, what you've actually worked through. So genetics could be totally against you, where you naturally don't have that range of motion. You may have flat feet that are rigid. There are a lot of different things, or you can have extremely Egyptian tapered feet.
I just never had that, like, that strong, you know, Beck Ann Sisk type of, like, right? Amazing. Like, you get up there and you can balance like a block.
Right. I mean, you were, I think I saw a picture of you. You're in the, you were in a Grishko, right?
2007s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So like, that's something that's like very difficult for people to balance in, you know, but like some people need that. So we're looking at different shapes of their feet and everything, but those are generally the things that we look for, like how much control do you have? And then apart from that, we're looking at discrepancies between your left and your right, because everyone has a favorite foot. Everyone. And then everyone has a side that's a little bit stronger than the other. So we're looking at how well are you able to balance the two of them. So you could be super ready. You can have all the range of motion, strength, flexibility, all of that. But if you're really, really uneven, that might cause a problem. So these are things that we are looking at. And if we are unsure about if a dancer is going to be safe on point, and this is their first pair of point shoes, we generally give them to the PT to have to go through a series of exercises to see if they have enough control and strength and flexibility to be on point safely. But a lot of times, it's not an end-all be-all. So there's always exceptions. It's not like a series of tests where if you don't pass, then you're not going to be able to go on point, because there's other factors like your maturity level. If a teacher really believes in you and she knows that you're a really great worker and you know that you they'll be able to push through, then they might put you up on point, even if you may not have all of the range of motion that you need for point. So these are some of the other factors that we don't know, but the teacher may. So it's like a conversation between your teacher, the point shoe fitter, and a physical therapist or any other medical professional who works with a lot of dancers on point.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. And what about signs of a well-fitted point shoe versus a point shoe that really is just ill-fitted or not working too well?
Number one is how much pain you are feeling. Mm. That's number one. So a lot of times when I'm just looking at a point shoe, I don't know what's happening inside the shoe. Sometimes it's very obvious. Like if you look at some of our reels, you can see that the dancer is clearly not sickling, but the shoe's making them do that. Or if there's a shoe that the dancer is just incredibly wobbly. Those are all things that we can see. And that's the easy part. If I can clearly see what the problem is, but only the dancer can tell me if something is incorrect, because pain is number one. If something is excruciatingly painful, if your toenail feels like it's falling off, that's not normal. If your bunion is hurting so badly on point that every time you go up on point, you feel like you want to take off your point shoes, that's not a good sign. So the difficult thing with dancers is that because they have such a high tolerance for pain, they mm-hmm. don't know what normal pain is. So it's hard to say. So a lot of dancers who go on point for the first time, asking them, how does that feel, is not a great question, because they don't know. They don't know how much you're supposed to feel. Like a really tight feel, but nothing should be pinching. Nothing should be painful. Nothing should feel like it's falling off or going numb or whatever. So that's the biggest factor. And then, like I mentioned, the other factors will be, you know, if the shoe's making you sickle, and sometimes the dancer is sickling, and that's the dancer needs to work on that. But if the shoe is completely off your heel, it's sickling, your foot doesn't feel like it's all the way inside the shoe. The point shoe should generally sit very straight, like an 11. If it's hooking one way or another, then that usually means that the foot's not straight into the shoe. Now, there are different types of feet as well, and then this is a whole different conversation, but sometimes you can have a C-shaped foot or a Z-shaped foot, and there's not a point shoe that's going to make you look like that straight 11, but that's a different factor. That's a sort of a deformity, and that's a different type of point shoe fitting. But it should generally look very straight. Nothing should be sticking out. If you can see all of your knuckles, that's not a good sign. And then if the shoe is not sitting straight, or if something just looks off, it's not good. Also, if the shoe is making you do weird things, like if it's making you pull back where you're not able to get all the way on point, that's not a good sign. If the dancer is completely wobbly and they can't balance on point, that's not a good sign. But there's so many different things that can go wrong with point shoes. Half of it's my job, half of it's the dancer's job, you know?
Right, right. That's so interesting. And I feel like, and you must feel, get a little frustrated with this, I think there's a lot of lack of education in general in regards to point shoe fitting, and a lot of old school teachers and studios that really, and it's not their necessarily their fault, but I would imagine that you see a lot of dancers just with ill-fitting shoes that could potentially limit them, and the shoe could make the biggest difference when they change that shoe.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think because we only do professional point shoe fitting, we often get dancers who are on their, like, we are their last resort.
Yeah.
They're going to quit. So we get people who fly in to get fitted for point shoes. Right. And when we see those problems, and these are just the people who did their research and found us.
Sure. But
for those people who just quit because it was just so incorrect, that is when it gets, that's when it's sad, because it's like, you could have so easily just fixed this with, and it's usually, it's not always an easy fix, but there is a fix. And right, just even understanding that this isn't your fault is a big conversation, you know? And it could be so many different things as well. Like, it could be like your point shoes might not be fitting and something might be hurting, and like we can discover a hidden injury that we might fix. And that's even a bigger problem than getting a point shoe, right? So it's a holistic process that we have to take everything into consideration.
Totally. What are some questions that dancers should maybe be prepared with if they are going to fit for point shoes, or, you know, either they're already in point shoes and they're not quite sure how they feel? But what are some things that dancers can kind of know and go in with when they are going to look for point shoes?
This is a really good question, because a lot of dancers don't know. I want the dancers to always come into the point shoe fitting with the problem, not with the solution. So what a lot of people do is that they will come in with a solution. Like, I need a shorter vamp. I need a softer shank. I need a higher heel. I need this. But if this is just them repeating something that their teacher said, they're usually suggesting these solutions because of a problem that they're having. But the problem is that these problems are not always fixed with these things. Each dancer is so different. Let's say that the problem is that the dancer's not getting over on their box. They're pulled back on their point shoes. Some teachers will send them to me and then they'll say, we need a shorter vamp. And then when I ask the dancer, why does she want you to have a shorter vamp? They don't exactly know why, because the teacher just told them to get a shorter vamp. Because when you're at the fitting, if you step up onto point, that's very different than when you're dancing. So you might be getting over your box fine at the point shoe fitting, but in class, when you're stepping up into PK, you're not getting over on point. So I don't know these things. And the dancer might be pulled back because the vamp is too short, but it could also be because the shank is too hard, the box doesn't fit correctly, it's the wrong shape, it's too short, or it's too wide. There's so many different reasons why a dancer might be having this problem, and we can't fix the problem unless we know what it is. So really understanding what that problem is walking into the point shoe fitting is very important, because I wish I can watch everybody in class, but, you know, I can't. And they dance very differently than when I do the assessment. because everyone's on their best behavior when during a point shoe fitting. They're stepping up onto point, they're turned out, they are, you know, doing everything perfectly. So I don't know what you're doing. Sometimes yeah. I will watch them at a performance and I will switch their shoes after, but it is very, I have to almost help. I need help from the dance teachers to tell me what's going on during class.
You know, I love that idea of coming with the problem, not necessarily the solution, because I see this with nutrition too. Dancers will come to me and they'll say, I need a gluten-free diet, or I need dairy-free choices, or I need soy-free. And I was talking about this over stories today. You know, very often we'll hear a lot of dancers having just gastrointestinal discomfort. And they'll say, you know, I saw whether, you know, someone recommending a gluten-free diet or no sugar, whatever it might be, how can I do that? And I'm like, well, you know, as a dietitian, I need to better assess what's going on. Like, what are you feeling during the week? You know, can we pinpoint where this distress is coming? Because it's not necessarily just the gluten-free diet or the dairy-free diet. And most often, actually, that's not the solution to these dancers' problems. So it's a very similar mindset. I love that. You know, don't necessarily, if this is just a tip for dancers, don't necessarily go in with the solution. Rather, you know, think about the problems you're having and then go to the professional, the licensed professional, and see what they feel could be the solution.
That's exactly right. And I think as we are more educated about the world, whether it's nutrition or point shoes, we're finding out that each individual person, each dancer is so different in how we respond to things. You can have two dancers who are, you know, seemingly the same, like same type of foot shape, same width, same flexibility, all of that. And they will do two completely different things in the same shoe. I even have twins. I interviewed twins from, what company was it? I think it was Milwaukee Ballet. Same feet. They're identical twins. Their feet look exactly the same, but two completely different customs, two totally different shapes, and two completely different preferences. So, yeah, a lot of people will come to me and say, well, I have very similar feet to this person. It's going to be the same, but it's completely different. And I think that's why that customization is really important, whether it's a point shoe fitter or a dietitian. It's something that needs to be bespoke to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So helpful. So a couple of quick questions that I have for you. The first is, what are some major things you're noticing post-COVID? With fitting, like any changes?
You know, okay, so there's some good things and bad things. One, the dancers have gone through a really big growth spurt. So, and I think it's because, I don't know, this is my theory. I think they're just sleeping more and just resting more. So a lot of dancers have grown a lot more. So there's a big growth spurt. With growth spurt and point shoe fitting, it's a little bit difficult because even if their shoe sizes haven't changed, when you go through a growth spurt, a lot of things change when you dance, like your balance is different. The way that you dance is different. Now you have a little bit more limbs. So it's more difficult to either get over on point or, you know, there's a lot of changes that go through it. So there is a little bit of frustration that comes with a growth spurt. So that's number one. And then two, with, I think a lot of dancers, the good part of the shutdown was that they were able to get rest that they were never able to get before. So I'm seeing a lot of injuries go away. So a lot of dancers were able to finally rest and recover instead of just, you know, taking a week off and then going right back into that same workload. So it's like a different type. With that being said, with the growth and the rest, I'm seeing a lot of dancers that need a little bit more support because they've lost a little bit of that intrinsic muscles in their foot. So we need to, so that is something that I'm noticing is that they're needing a little bit more support, either lateral or in the backbone of the shoe.
Sure. And how often should a dancer get fitted?
I would say that from when they're first and getting their point shoes from when they're 11 or 12, I would say at least a couple of years, they need to get refitted every single time. if you have the option of getting fitted, like if you have access to that, I would say just check in.
Yeah.
If you need to, we have dancers obviously that go through a pair of point shoes every, you know, week or every month, and it's not viable for them to get that fitting all the time. But for dancers who are going through a pair of point shoes at least once a month, maybe 6 months after you're 14 or 15, I would check in at least by year or twice a year.
Yeah, I think this is so important for anybody listening, because the body is ever changing, which is normal, and our body should change as we get older. But yeah. You know, our point shoe is one of our most important pieces of equipment. So I think it's important to evolve with that and make sure you're constantly rechecking or reassessing what your needs could be, because they could change.
Yeah. And I don't know if you had this wave of adult dancers as well for since the pandemic. I think a lot of dancers are starting. And even adult dancers who have stopped growing, their feet are changing drastically. And we work through their feet and their, you know, we work through their progress with different types of point shoes. So I think that's also really important to check in with your fitter.
You know, personal experience, 2 pregnancies later, I can tell you my feet have completely changed.
That's another thing too, is that if you go through an injury, if you went through pregnancy, all of that, your feet are totally different, and you're like a different, you're dancing with like a different body. Yeah. And that's your feet.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. And then 2 more questions. Talk to us a little bit about soft shoes versus hard shoes, because I was always under the impression, and I am obviously not an expert in this, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I was always under the impression that soft shoes were beneficial for strengthening, but are they more prone to injury?
Yeah, so when it comes to point shoes, everything is like a balance between stability and strengthening. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that the dancer is supported enough so that they're safe, but at the same time, we need it to be malleable enough so that they're strengthening their feet. When we were growing up, remember when people all thought that harder shoes were for stronger feet?
Yeah, absolutely.
When we were growing up, that's what everybody thought. But what we're noticing now is that the more you're able to work your feet inside the point shoe, the stronger you are going to get, because you're moving your feet instead of having a stilt that just goes up and down. So we've debunked that.
I will say again, from personal experience, my abilities on point flourished after I started wearing softer shoes in a regular ballet class.
Yes.
I was able to work on that articulation.
Exactly. So we want the dancer to be able to bend the shoes, to be able to articulate their feet inside the point shoes, to use their body weight to kind of strengthen your feet. Now, the shoe is softer, it doesn't give you enough support. So we also have to balance that with how much support you need. So if I'm getting like baby Bambi, like in point shoes that are extremely flexible, but have wobbly ankles and like weaker feet, like it's actually really dangerous to give them something that is super, super soft, because it's not going to support you. So our goal is to get you to a soft enough shoe, it is really difficult to kind of balance that. Now, I use this anecdote all the time, but there are certain companies with schools attached to them that use Freed's. And that uses, Freed's are made with a very particular type of glue. Every point shoe company has different glue, but this one crumbles. And that's why when you see it on stage, it just looks like a sock. Like if, like all, it's just so soft. So there's nothing blocking, nothing, whatever, but it's so soft that a lot of dancers are not able to handle it when they're first going on point. If you're 10 or 11 years old and you're going on point for the first time, this shoe is not going to work for you. It's, you're just kind of, you know, kind of sitting on top of it, and then it'll crumble underneath your weight, but it does make you stronger faster. This struggle against this soft shoe helps you manipulate your feet to become stronger. So I had this girl that I fitted at San Francisco Ballet School years and years ago. So flexible, so weak. This girl is just not going to, like, I was like, I cannot put this girl in a Freed. And they insisted that I put her in a Freed. So I put her in the strongest Freed I know. And then I kind of forgot about her. And then years later, I saw her at Joffrey Ballet School. And she was like 18 at that time. And I forgot who she was, but she had the most flexible, beautiful, strong feet I'd ever seen. And she was wearing very, very soft shoes. And they were she was making them last. And I was like, whatever you did over the past however many years you were on point, you did an incredible job, because it's so rare to see someone who is this strong and this flexible with your body type. And she was like, you fitted me in a Freed like 5 years ago, and I've always been in soft shoes, so I had to struggle to become stronger. Now, this is a success story.
Wow.
This is a success story when it comes. The failed story would be we put her in a really soft shoe, and she wasn't able to support herself, and then she was getting injured. So that's the other side of the story. So we always have to kind of balance what is safe versus what is strengthening.
Sure. That's a really great point. So Josephine, my final question for you is, how would you define a healthy dancer?
Someone who, you know, I'm going to take this off of your blog. I love the phrase joyful movement. Someone who is challenged, but someone who is joyful in their movement, in whatever form that may be. I think that is a successful dancer, whether you're doing this as a profession or not. I think if you're able to get to a place where you are joyful in what you're doing and you're nourishing your body a certain way, if you are strengthening your body a certain way, and you're using, if you're just having a wonderful time dancing, I think that is a successful dancer.
And if the joy is not there anymore, I think it's a big sign that you need to take 2 steps back.
I completely agree in everything that you do. And I think for a lot of dancers, because we are always balancing between the pushing through difficulty and being successful, I think having that challenge is important for us. Having whatever that is, I think having being constantly challenged and at the same time being happy and joyful while you're doing it in whatever you do, that's a success. And I think that goes for business, that goes for dance, that goes for any type of work and career path. You have to be challenged, and you have to be growing, and you have to be joyful. And if you don't, then maybe it's time to reassess.
Yeah, Josephine, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. I love connecting with you.
Me too. Anytime you need me, I'm here for you.